On this episode, we uncover how Fairtrade USA is leveraging advanced technology to enhance transparency in global supply chains. We'll hear about their work with AWS prototyping to build AI tools to scale their ability to share authentic stories from farmers and producers worldwide on the positive impact to the people and communities behind Fairtrade certification. Well, I am delighted to welcome from Fairtrade USA, VP of Engineering and Analytics, Matt Pope. Matt, thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sarah. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and to share our journey of technology and data and innovation.
Wonderful. And from AWS, we have prototyping engineer Patrick O'Connor. Patrick, always great to connect with you.
Always a pleasure.
Fantastic. Well, for our international listeners, Matt, can you tell us a little bit about the mission of Fairtrade USA?
Fairtrade USA is a nonprofit, and we are the leading fair trade certification in the United States. And we're working to ensure farmers, workers, and fishers earn fair wages, are really safe from exploitation, and they have the resources to invest in their communities and to protect their environments. So really, it's our belief that all farmers deserve a fair price for their harvest, and so they can stay on their land and keep their kids in school and farm sustainably. We envision a day when that's the norm, where all workers enjoy safe working conditions.
Absolutely. Is that really the definition of fair trade?
Yeah, so fair trade is really a couple of things, and there's a couple of ways in which we drive impact.
Yeah.
So we have standards throughout the supply chain, or that, you know, apply to different actors within supply chains. And so those really ensure that kind of the integrity of the supply chain, that there's no worker exploitation, that there's protection of the environment. And that's really the integrity or the assurance part of fair trade. And that exists throughout the supply chain. So all the way from the producer, all the way to the brand. The second aspect of fair trade is really the premium that's paid. And so that's an additional sum of money that's paid directly to the producers to use however they see fit. And so this is really a key aspect of fair trade, which enables that kind of agency and autonomy and allows the producers themselves to kind of direct their own investment and determine kind of where their greatest areas of needs are.
That's interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about where you see those investments going?
Yeah, so we see them going to different places, kind of depending upon the needs of the workers themselves. So some of them will go towards sort of enhancing, you know, production, or so they can improve the quality of the product, you know, and so that they can really compete in increasingly challenging economic climates and sort of dealing with the impacts of, you know, even climate change and the effects that's having on their production. We also see investments in communities, in healthcare or in childcare or in clean water projects. And so we can see kind of a diversity of investment of their premium dollars, but it's always in the areas of the highest need for that community at that given point in time.
So for our audience, can you give us some sense of the scale of what we're talking about in terms of producers and brands, et cetera?
Yeah, so we've been able to impact about 1.6 million workers in our 25 years, which is, I think, impressive and admirable, but there's still an estimated 500 million farmers that are living on, you know, less than $2 a day and really are struggling to meet their basic needs and to compete in a complex market. So there's a lot of need. There's been a lot of impact, but there's a lot of remaining need. So that's why that's why scale is so critical to our success.
Absolutely. And to the success of those individuals, right? Tell us a little bit about one of the stories.
There's a lot of great stories to choose from. I think, you know, we see a few examples around education. We saw a project in Mexico with workers from Wholesome Harvest there. They were using premium money to buy a school bus so that they could get the children of the workers to the public school. It was too far away to walk. We've also seen scholarships quite a bit. You know, factory workers, or the children of factory workers in India, and tea growers in Uganda as a couple of examples. So lots of supportive education and of children and making sure that they're getting their, you know, this sort of, they're able to have opportunities to kind of choose the life in the future that they want to have.
Right. And to do that, you need technology. That's where the AWS comes in, I'm guessing. Tell us a little bit about your technology landscape before and where you're looking to transition.
Yeah. So, you know, we really in 2022 and 23 embarked on business and technology transformation. And that was really an opportunity to kind of back up and just look at all the tools and technologies that we had and our kind of ways of working with technology and figure out what was serving us well and maybe what was holding us back. And so in that, we really chose to invest in on, you know, AWS as a platform because of its opportunities to, you know, innovate quickly and safely, I will say, as well as in a data warehouse and really shoring up our data collection as well. So it wasn't just about, do we have a place for the data to, you know, reside after it comes in, but are we actually collecting, you know, meaningful, accurate data? A lot of our data is actually user-generated content, meaning the producers and other actors within the supply chain are actually contributing this data to us. So we have a challenge of needing to ensure that that data provided is of really high quality and is complete, and then, you know, transform it for use, you know, within our data warehouse. The stories that we have the most of are actually reports of how that premium has been invested. And that's actually a requirement of our producer standards. So we don't mandate how the money is invested, but we do ensure that the money was invested based on the needs of the community. So the community of workers needs to conduct a needs assessment survey, and then they need to invest the money based on the needs that have been identified. So that way we just ensure that kind of the integrity of that investment. So that data is reported to us, and it's a lot of structured content, but also unstructured content. So we're getting, you know, stories sort of embedded in the goals of the project or in the outcomes or in the status updates. And so we're intaking that content, and some of which is really great from sort of an impact storytelling perspective, and other content is maybe, you know, not quite as kind of appropriate for that particular use. So, right. You know, sifting through that data has definitely been a challenge for us.
Right. The volume and complexity of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And having that presumably more on a more regular basis, being able to surface those stories, surface that information, that impact.
For sure. Yeah. And often it's, you know, not in English. So that can be a challenge too. So we look for tools and systems that can, you know, convert that into, you know, languages that we can deal with internally.
Right. Okay. And how did you come to work with Patrick and the prototyping team?
Yeah, that was really an exciting opportunity. So in 2024, we had the opportunity to work with AWS through the support of their Imagine grant. And so that was kind of our first big initiative to scale the delivery of this impact data to our brand and retail partners. Then we call that Insights Hub. And so that's a way that we deliver this kind of quantitative data into our partner portal application. And this is really the nuts and bolts of the data. This is kind of how much premium have they generated and kind of, you know, where has it gone, to which producers and which origins, and then how is it used at kind of a categorical level. So I'll call that kind of the quantitative data. But we had, you know, as we kind of got that in place, we're you know, deploying that out to our commercial partners, brands and retailers, we thought we need to figure out how to scale this kind of qualitative aspect of impact storytelling. And so we developed out a concept that we called Stories of Impact. And this was an idea of using generative AI to sort of get at, you know, sift through this kind of this haystack and find those, you know, needles. So we have this large volume of data coming in. How do we find the best, most kind of contextually relevant and timely content to deliver?
That's a good segue for you, Patrick. Tell us a little bit about what you were trying to accomplish in this prototyping engagement and kind of what the high-level design points were.
Yeah, sure thing. So as Matt was saying, Fairtrade USA, they have an influx of a ton of stories. And the key goal that we were trying to achieve in this prototype is how can we contextually rank, or how can we scale in such a process so that Fairtrade can come in and then selectively for a specific campaign, country, region, topic, how can they find the most impactful story, given that there's a collection of possibly thousands of stories that are quite similar? So that was the problem posed to us as the prototyping team. And just to take it one level further, it wasn't just textually based, but it was also imagery based too. So stories that are impactful, but also images that relate to the campaign being proposed. As Matt said before, Gen AI was a factor that we wanted to experiment and see where we could go with this prototyping. And that's really what we did. From a very high scale, what we ended up developing for Fairtrade USA was a Amplify UI that essentially mimicked the design that Matt had envisioned. They would come in, upload their stories, whether it's textual-based, imagery-based. We would follow a assessment criteria, so we can go a bit deeper into that, how the Gen AI model works. Mm-hmm. But from a very high end, the model would use this human input criteria to then assign a score that at the end, or the conclusion, Fairtrade could then come in and find those stories, but more importantly, find the most impactful story that they're looking for.
Fantastic. And Matt, so important for you to be able to share those. It just creates more affinity, I'm assuming, with your with the consumer, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, this was really an interesting application of generative AI, I think, which, you know, what's really important to us is to maintain authenticity. So, you know, often people are thinking of, how do I use generative AI to actually generate content? It's a really great content generator. And we purposely did not want to use it for that purpose. We don't want to generate stories from producers. We have stories from producers. We have, you know, stories from those that have been impacted by the standard and by the premium. So we wanted to just figure out a way to surface those more, you know, more efficiently and more effectively. So this is a tool for staff or internal staff. So we can keep that, you know, human in the loop, and we can ensure that they have an effective tool for drawing out the most, you know, timely and relevant content that's, you know, contextually specific to whoever they're delivering it to. So if this is a, you know, coffee brand that's sourcing from Peru, we want to make sure that we're pulling from producers within their supply chain, ideally, and that are in Peru, you know, Peru, and that these are recent projects.
Right.
Really an interesting, I think, application of generative AI that's not really what people are thinking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So Patrick, give us another level deeper of how you were able to go in and apply those criteria, et cetera.
Yeah. So working with Matt and his team, assessing these criteria often comes from personal experience in the industry. So Fairtrade USA, It isn't your typical, does it look shiny? Is it a good photo? It goes one level deeper, which is what we collaborated with Matt to understand what these criteria assessments were. Now, one approach that we did try was, this is the story, this is the assessment, assign a score, and then we will use that score to essentially scale. What we found through our first trials was, this wasn't a very effective approach. What we found, what was happening with the LLMs, was they were being very lenient in their scores. They were assigning fives and fours out of five. So going one level deeper, what we decided to do was rephrase or tone it differently, in the sense that we want you to start from zero. So everything is 0 out of 5. Based on these criteria points that we've gathered from Fairtrade USA, we want you to assign points as a rewarding mechanism for every piece of evidence that you've detected, whether it's a story or an image, to then enhance towards 5. What we found was this provided a much more less lenient, much more effective scale so that we could then see differences of maybe a blurry image that was taken of the ground compared to one that was providing a much more impactful story.
Fantastic. And what's some of the technology that you use to do that?
Yeah, and this is where scale comes into great mass, is we used Bedrock to be able to run our inferences or run our Gen AI models against. This is serverless, so you can simply invoke it as an API. The rest of the technologies we used, so we used Amplify, AppSync, Lambdas, and we even used Aurora serverless to mimic the database structure. So we really tried to stay on the scale of serverless as a means to say that, yes, it can work for one use case, but if you can use it for one use case, you can then scale this across the landscape for more and more stories.
You know, we often talk, Patrick, you'll know since you've been on the podcast a couple times, about failure being inseparable from experimentation and innovation. And Matt, you mentioned this, you know, using innovation to help create better visibility for your consumers and brands. And you hit on something there on the technology front, Patrick, on something, an approach that kind of didn't go quite as you thought it would in terms of that leniency. Was there anything else that you had to overcome? Matt, I'll go to you first, that was might be seen as a failure, but you were able to reposition as a learning or to pivot away from and do something different.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that we learned, and it was great that we, you know, Patrick and the prototyping team got into this so early before we had really planned to at the beginning of this year, that we were able to surface an issue or a gap really in the data. We didn't have quite as much data in the right place that we needed to support, you know, this type of a solution. So what we're now able to do is, as we're moving this through into production and embedding it within our own, you know, AWS infrastructure, we're able to, in parallel, you know, shore up that data issue. So I think it definitely brought that to light. I'm glad that it came to light, you know, late last year instead of early this year, because now we have the opportunity to address that data issue at the same time we're building out the infrastructure to bring this into our, you know, forward into production. So
I think that's will resonate with so many people, Matt. The notion of so many customers we speak to have data silos or data locked in different areas or missing data, right? Gaps and being able to really create a differentiated model that is based on your data is so important, that access and understanding the sort of landscape of your data, right?
Yep. Nothing has been more helpful in, you know, highlighting data challenges, gaps and quality issues than in, you know, delivering these products. And I think it has meant that we haven't been able to deploy them as widely as we would want to or as quickly as we would want to with our partners, with brands and retailers. But it has surfaced the opportunity to go back and, you know, shore up those gaps, which we're actively doing right now. So it's really hard to talk about quality issues, I think, with the programmatic folks and with the business stakeholders without having clear examples, sort of why it matters that this particular data point isn't a high enough quality or isn't complete enough to meet this, you know, need that they've identified. So.
Right. And so much of the work that you do is trust-based, right? And so you need to maintain that high quality and probably ensure that the stories that you're surfacing, the data you're providing, is always very accurate, right?
For sure. I mean, at the core, you know, of the organization is our assurance process and is our standard. And that's all based on trust and on confidence. So yeah, we definitely need to maintain that.
Mm-hmm. And I also understand that your organization has grown tremendously over the last few years and building in these tools that help create that structure and governance is probably also part of that scale, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, what we saw in our kind of earlier years as an organization, we've been around for just over 25 years, I believe. And what we saw was we sort of hit a scaling limit. We sort of hit a point at which we couldn't drive any more impact because we just didn't have the technology and data and processes to support it. And so I think that was a really important, you know, realization to come to at a certain point. And in the last really decade, we've been building out our technology capabilities. And then finally getting to the point where we feel like we're really, you know, hitting our stride. And really a partnership with AWS, which has been exciting, I think are really kind of accelerating our ability to deliver impact and to be able to leverage our technology and data. So it's a really exciting time, I think, and tons of opportunity in the space. So,
yeah, sounds like it. So what's next on the path here to production with this particular workload, but also just also in general, what's next for Fairtrade USA?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, we will take this year to take what the prototyping team has developed sort of, you know, in isolation as they sort of need to work and work that into our sort of internal, you know, infrastructure, technology and data infrastructure. And that will deliver the solution to staff by, you know, Q3 of this year or so that they can get at this content quickly and efficiently, and that it's going to be, you know, contextually relevant content. So if they're, you know, looking for, again, a particular a story from a particular, you know, brand or a retailer supply chain, they can get at that quickly and even maybe align to that particular partner's, you know, values or particular interests. So we have brands and retailers that are potentially more focused on, you know, human rights issues and, you know, others that are focused on environmental issues. And so we can surface, you know, timely and relevant, you know, content to them really quickly so that they can use that in their own, you know, campaigns, in their own marketing campaigns with consumers. Right. That's a really important step, is just getting this, you know, used internally. The other thing that we're working on is more content. So we have more opportunities to gather outside of just the details of this premium use at the producer level, you know, quotes and updates and other content from the producers themselves. So we see feeding more of that structured and unstructured content through the solution so that we don't just have this singular focus on this premium investment, but we have a little bit more of a holistic view about the producer's activities and impact.
Right. Fantastic. That sounds like a very exciting, indeed exciting times, right? As you said. And I just want to thank you both for being here today and sharing this journey with us and the wonderful mission of Fairtrade USA. As we wrap, Patrick, I'll go to you first. Something you learned or would recommend to listeners who might be undertaking a similar journey?
Yeah, for me, it was very rewarding. You know, growing up, you'd always go to the supermarket and see illustrations around the impact and the downstream of certain products. So this prototype was very rewarding to see the mechanisms behind these organizations. Often you see a front, but once you get into the works, you realize it's a complex network, which is a data problem at the end of the day. It's a very complex data problem that is surfacing impact. So for me, it was just really good to be able to hear from the people, hear their logic, particularly around, Matt said it, you know, impacts around climate change, impacts around providing funds and investments in areas. You don't typically see this as an outsider, but having worked closely with Matt, I can now see how tech is actually impacting these fields of work.
Yeah, very inspiring, isn't it? Wonderful. Matt, final words for you. What would you share, reflections from the experience?
Yeah, I think it's really been an incredible experience, you know, to see this prototype being team work and kind of how they work and the way that they put together this solution so quickly was really inspiring and exciting. And I'm really thrilled with kind of where it, you know, sets us up early this year to complete the solution and get it into the hands of our staff. So yeah, lots of learnings on how to run a project like this quickly and how to get to a prototype quickly so you can learn and then adapt.
Right. Fantastic. And you know, Matt, I was thinking, do you have any calls to action for our listeners? I was thinking this is an area that touches all of us, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think the easiest thing is, you know, look for the Fair Trade certified label on coffee, tea, chocolate, produce, apparel, you know, when you're shopping. And I think, you know, now you know sort of what the impact of that is, and that it really is a direct, tangible impact on farmers and workers around the world, and really allows them to have fair wages, you know, produce sustainably, and really have agency and control over their own future. So look for the seal. If you don't see it, ask questions about why, you know, there aren't products that have, you know, transparent supply chains that are being offered.
Oh, great advice. Thank you, Matt. And thanks again, Patrick, for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.